don't need to add further instability. That we can control, and we should. So it's time to get the budget done on time.
Governor Walker asks lawmakers to finish the budget in 90 days. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, January 19th. Good evening, Zachariah Hughes. Also tonight, the official kickoff to the mayor's race in Anchorage.
I'm very, very adamant about not imposing more taxes on small businesses and businesses in this town right now when we're just starting to come out of a recession.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Federal Subsistence Board is accepting applications through February 2nd to fill seats on the 10 Subsistence Regional Advisory Councils. Councils meet at least twice a year and provide critical advice to the board on subsistence management issues. Individuals may apply or nominate someone for membership. More at doi.gov/subsistence/regions or call 800-478-1456. This message is sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
As you've maybe heard, the federal government could shut down tonight at 8 p.m. Alaska time if Congress can't reach a spending agreement. Let's turn to Liz Ruskin, Alaska Public Media's Washington correspondent, to tell us what Alaskans can expect if the shutdown occurs. I asked her first to talk about what won't change if the government shuts down.
Everyone's going to get their mail like normal. Active duty military, they go to work as normal. The VA says they plan to keep all appointments. Alaska Native Medical Center will be open. Public lands, national parks and refuges. If there's no gate, go on in. Help yourself. Federal courts can operate for at least a couple weeks. Social security checks will go out. Weather forecasting, FAA, all that will continue as normal. NOAA says that its fisheries management activities and enforcement will continue. That was an issue during the last shutdown.
So that's what won't change. What will?
Military civilian employees, many of them will be furloughed. All National Park Service visitor centers will close, and parks personnel won't be on duty, except for a few who provide emergency services. Basically, if it's a park and it's got a door or a gate, count on it being locked. And, you know, generally a lot of federal workers will be furloughed.
Right. So the federal workers and the military service members who do have to work during the shutdown, will they get paid?
Yes. Most just got their regular paychecks. So the military, for instance, they will have no gap in pay until February 1. That's when their next check comes out. If a shutdown lasts longer, the agencies incur an obligation to pay them. And once Congress funds the government, they will be paid. Now, in 2013, during a 16-day shutdown, Congress passed an emergency bill so that the military, even though the shutdown spanned a pay period, the military paychecks arrived on time. So that's something that Congress is likely, it could do again. I mean, who knows?
And what about employees who are put on furlough?
That is up to Congress, but in years past, federal employees got back pay for the time that they were off duty because of the furlough.
What about federal workers who want to volunteer their time? Can they do that?
No, they cannot just do their regular jobs without pay, according to federal guidance. That's not allowed.
Anything else?
Yes. BOEM, the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, they have a public hearing set for next week on the draft plan for offshore drilling. And if the government shuts down, we're told that meeting is off, and anybody en route to come up to Alaska to hear the public comments, those people will have to turn around and go home. Oh, and one more thing, Zach. Postal rates. This is completely unrelated to any shutdown, but postal rates, they're going up on Sunday. Just, you know, word to the wise.
Thank you, Liz. I appreciate that. And I'm sure we'll be hearing from you plenty more in the days ahead.
Yes. Thank you, Zach.
That was Liz Ruskin, D.C. correspondent for Alaska Public Media. A top interior official in Alaska has confirmed that on Monday, the Trump administration plans to sign a deal to build a controversial road through Eisenbeck National Wildlife Refuge. Steve Wachowski, who advises Interior on Alaska issues, says a ceremony is scheduled in Washington, D.C. He says, first, former Alaska Department of Natural Resources Commissioner Joe Balash will be sworn in as the agency's Assistant Secretary for Land and Minerals Management.
And then right afterwards, we're signing the King Cove land deal. That's scheduled.
An advisory was sent out by Interior. Says Della Trumbull of King Cove, Governor Bill Walker, and Alaska's congressional delegation will join Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke at the ceremony. But Wachowski says he's uncertain if the potential federal government shutdown would mean the deal signing needs to be rescheduled. The road through Eisenbeck National Wildlife Refuge is strongly opposed by environmental groups. They say it'll have a significant environmental impact. Wachowski says the community of King Cove needs the 12-mile road to access an airport for emergency services.
The decision for us, quite frankly, was pretty easy. It was protecting the human life. And we don't think there's going to be any of the doom and gloom scenarios that some of the folks have talked about.
Wachowski was speaking after giving a presentation at an industry conference in Anchorage. The race to be Anchorage's next mayor is on. Today was the first official day of filing, and two major candidates both turned in their paperwork, kicking off the campaign ahead of this year's municipal election in April. Incumbent Ethan Berkowitz is running for a second term, saying he wants to finish the work his administration has started in improving public safety and shoring up the local economy.
I've spent a large part of the first term cleaning up the mess that we inherited. We will be done cleaning up the mess in fairly short order, which will allow us to launch on some of the initiatives that we would like to do and actually start moving the city forward faster.
Berkowitz has aggressively expanded hiring to grow the police department, but much of his term has been colored with widespread complaints about worsening crime, from small offenses like theft to multiple years of record-setting homicide rates. Berkowitz says he's sympathetic to residents' concerns and that he's running to continue policies that are beginning to show progress.
There's an increased level of service. We still have a ways to go, but we've also seen at the same time that the city's been stepping it up, the state's been in retreat. They've cut the number of troopers, they've cut the number of prosecutors, they cut the amount of detox facilities that are available. And as a consequence, the city is able to move forward only incrementally.
Berkowitz says he's overseen a growing diversification in Anchorage's economy at a time when state funds and industry spending have been evaporating. His administration is asking voters to approve the sale of a municipal utility to the Chugach Electric Association, saying it'll help reduce local energy prices in the long term. On the same ballot, residents will also vote on the controversial bathroom bill, which would regulate public restrooms by biological sex at birth rather than a person's self-identified gender. It's a measure Berkowitz firmly opposes.
I think it's a divisive measure that is based on stereotyping and unfounded fear.
That's a stance shared by the mayor's chief opponent.
I'm not going to vote for it.
Rebecca Logan is the head of the Alaska Support Industry Alliance and a former small business owner who's lived in Anchorage for 28 years. Speaking at City Hall just after dropping off her official paperwork, she described a platform similar to her opponent's, putting public safety and the local economy at the center of her campaign.
I'm very, very adamant about not imposing more taxes on small businesses and businesses in this town right now when we're just starting to come out of a recession.
Logan has earned the endorsement of the Alaska Republican Party and some prominent conservatives, although municipal races are technically nonpartisan. She's calling for budget reductions through efficiencies, and she wants the city to take a tougher stance on crime, including changes to SB 91 that might add more local control and resources to handle misdemeanor offenses.
Public safety is the number one priority. We want to be somebody people look at for best practices. So here's the best public safety program. Here's what it requires to fund it. And it's not always financial, right? But provide the resources, changing laws, so that we can do that and work towards that.
Candidates for the mayor's race have until February 2nd to file. This is Anchorage's first election conducted by mail, with ballots being sent out in mid-March and tallied on April 3rd. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Pete Kaiser, the reigning K300 champion, says his team is ready to race.
It's probably the most talented athletic group I've ever had. The question is, have we got the right training this year?
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thank you.
Governor Walker gave the State of the State address last night, and his main message was that Alaska can control its own destiny if it follows through on policies he's proposed. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman sat down with Walker today to talk about what's next in the Capitol. I asked Andrew about Walker's insistence that the legislature pass a budget in 90 days.
I asked Governor Walker about comments from Senator Anna McKinnon. She called Walker's proposal to end per diem payments to the legislature after 90 days if they don't pass a budget, quote, having the governor throw a punch, end quote, at lawmakers. Walker said the marathon budget talks over the last 3 years have hurt the economy. Here's Walker.
We don't need to add further instability. That we can control, and we should. So it's time to get the budget done on time.
I should add that while some Alaskans have criticized legislators' per diems, the legislature didn't give much applause to Walker when he talked about the proposal last night.
Walker has to fill two vacancies in the legislature. One of them is House District 40, and that's vacant due to Dean Westlake resigning over harassment allegations from female legislative aides and other women. And then there's Senate District E, which is vacant because former Senator Mike Dunleavy resigned to focus on running for governor. Did you ask about those positions?
Yes, I did. Walker didn't say who his replacement choices were, but he did talk about how he's making the decision. This is what he said.
It's somewhat like selecting judges. There's a process for that, and we have a discussion with them. I've met every candidate to be a judge. I'll meet every candidate to be a replacement. And so I look for someone that's good representation of that district.
Walker also said he'd like to fill the position soon.
Rising oil prices have led some legislators to say that they were right to resist new taxes supported by the governor. Did Walker talk about that at all?
Well, I asked about the rising price of oil and oil production. Every fiscal crisis the state has been solved by rising oil revenue. And I asked Walker if he was concerned that lawmakers will rely too much on oil revenue.
We need to remember, the last time we had a major drop in the price of oil down to $26 a barrel, we had $16 billion in savings. Right now we have two. So that shock absorber isn't there anymore. Then you have to do something pretty immediate. We celebrate every dollar it goes up. There's no question about that. Do I feel, is that a good long-term sustainable fiscal plan to continue to, you know, look at what the price of oil is this morning? No.
When I asked Walker what's different from last year in trying to pass a fiscal plan, he noted that the plan is already in a legislative conference committee that could work out the differences over this session.
All right. Well, Andrew, it's always nice to hear from you, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks a lot, Zach.
Andrew Kitchenman is state government and politics reporter for Alaska Public Media and KTOO. And as he mentioned, among the many items on the governor's to-do list remains a decision on who he should appoint to the vacant state Senate seat for District E. The appointment is needed after Wasilla Republican Mike Dunleavy resigned to focus on his gubernatorial campaign. As Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove reports, party officials forwarded three names to the governor for consideration.
After whittling down a longer list of names through several rounds of voting Monday night, District E Republicans selected their shortlist to fill Dunleavy's seat. They are retiree Tom Brond, who says he worked in public safety for 30-plus years, sitting House member George Rauscher, who currently represents District 9, and Todd Smolden, an Anchorage teacher. Brond declined my interview request, saying he distrusts the news media. On the phone from Juneau as the legislative session got underway this week, Rauscher says he's still unpacking and dealing with a busy schedule. He says he appreciates the selection by District E officials.
I work hard for him, and I think there's some reciprocation going on there, and I just want to be able to keep serving them in the way they expect.
Rauscher says it's too soon to say whether further cuts to state budgets are necessary to make up the gap between what the state spends and what it takes in. That's something Dunleavy argued for. Rauscher says his priorities would remain the same if he ends up in the Senate. He says that includes advocating for smarter or perhaps fewer state regulations and other policies to boost employment in Alaska.
We're talking about private industry jobs. We're talking about what we can do to keep the people in Alaska working. I think that's very important. I think we have to understand what makes the job market happen.
Smolden, the third applicant on the list, has not worked in state government. But he says being a teacher has prepared him to serve in the state Senate. Smolden says that many of the skills, like acting as a mediator and finding ways to intelligently answer questions, are the same.
You gather information from a variety of sources and you extract that and turn that into something that's usable and workable. So in that sense, crafting legislation, working with constituents, those are skills that I have honed as a classroom teacher.
Smolden says the constituents in District E have made it clear that they want a senator who will continue to work on fixing state crime legislation known as SB 91, protect the payout of the Alaska Permanent Fund dividend, and craft a sustainable budget. Smolden says he agrees with Dunleavy that not enough has been trimmed from the budget. He thinks there are ways to find more efficiency in state government.
We have a spending priority problem. And so when we're spending money on things that are not, you know, the essential functions of government, and then we can't afford more prosecutors or more state troopers or things like that, for me, that's bad leadership and bad policy.
Smolden says Rauscher may be better known, but he added that he hopes the governor picks the person who will best serve the district's needs. None of the three applicants says they have spoken with the governor yet about the selection. The deadline is February 14th. In Anchorage, I'm Casey Grove.
The big day has arrived. Despite warm weather, open holes, and a new trail, the 39th annual Kuskokwim 300 Sled Dog Race is set to begin this evening. All eyes are on Bethel Musher and three-time champion Pete Kaiser. Will he earn what fans are calling a four-peat after his three-peat last year? Kaiser is hoping yes.
It's probably the most talented athletic group I've ever had. The question is, have we got the right training this year with the trails the last month to pull it off again, but we're going to try.
Contender Brent Sass has placed second to Kaiser in this year's race for the last 2 years. Sass doesn't plan for that to happen again.
I'm still here to win the race. There's no doubt about that.
Both mushers are racing with different advantages. Kaiser's team is mostly veterans, many with multiple K300s and Iditarods under their belts, or harnesses. Sass's team is largely rookies, but Sass trained all season in the snowy interior, while Kaiser stayed in Bethel, training on hard ice. That meant shorter runs and more rest days for his dogs. The Kuskokwim 300 starts at 6:30 tonight in Bethel.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities and in the 40 years of Alaska operations.
ACPE's Education Loan Refinance can save you money and give you just one bill for all your private, state, and federal loans. The Alaska Refinance Loan offers Alaska residents a 4.95% interest rate with no fees. You choose between a 5, 10, or 15-year plan. Go to acpe.alaska.gov/radio or call 1-800-441-2962. This message sponsored by Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education.
Would you like to play a part in the public media you enjoy? Consider becoming a member or corporate sponsor. Contact your public radio station to learn how.
Ketchikan, Kotzebue,
Dillingham, Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, Mr. Plow. Every winter, many of us take it for granted that when we wake up after a big snowfall, the roads will be clear and ready for the morning commute. But who do we have to thank for that? KTOO's Adeline Baxter wanted to find out. She discovered although Juneau doesn't get as much snow as other parts of the state, the amount of work that goes into plowing it is surprising.
It's 4 a.m. at the Department of Transportation's maintenance bay off of Glacier Highway. Snow is falling, and four huge trucks are idling in the parking lot, ready to head out for the early shift. Today, I get to live the dream of every truck-loving little kid. Before this assignment, my only experience with plow driving came courtesy of The Simpsons.
Oh, Mr. Plow, that's my name. That name again is Mr. Plow.
I'm sure the real thing isn't as glamorous as Homer makes it seem. Still, with my snow boots and thermos full of hot chocolate, I may be too excited.
Do you get a lot of people asking if they can go for rides?
No, we don't get a lot of requests.
That's Richard Asplund. He's letting me tag along for his morning shift with DOT's plow team.
Yeah, I have a daughter. No, there's no way I'd bring her out here.
We set off into the early morning darkness. Beacon Drive is almost empty as we fall into a diagonal formation with the other three trucks. Now each plow picks up the snow left over by the previous one, gradually pushing all of it onto the right shoulder in a flurry of white.
The snow's real light today, so as long as we're not going too fast, we shouldn't blast any mailboxes or garbage cans over. But if it's wet snow and there's a lot of it, it's a real hazard.
People's mailboxes just get blown over sometimes?
Oh yeah, they just ripped right off. If you forgot and just started driving, you would just rip them all off.
Ahead of us, graders work the intersections clearing berms. Asplund grew up on Prince of Wales Island. He came to Juneau 2 years ago from Petersburg. He got started as an equipment operator in the logging industry, but started working for DOT after the jobs dried up.
So there's really a lot going on at once. In addition to driving and watching where your other trucks are, you're also operating the plow level with this joystick?
Yes, and the belly blade and the sander.
I guess it takes a lot of practice.
It does take some practice. Most of us have been riding equipment for a long time, so that helps.
Asplund says the biggest hazard for drivers comes when regular cars try to pass when they're plowing in formation. The trucks are heavy to begin with, and the extra winter equipment makes stopping quickly impossible.
So now we have this pickup coming up alongside of us again, and it's just more things I have to watch and be careful for. And he's not gaining anything, you know. If he would just stay back, he would be much better off.
For plow drivers like Asplund, the day begins well before 4 a.m. Juneau's plow team works holidays and weekends, depending on the schedule. Asplund said they rarely take vacation or sick days in the winter. They need to be ready to work whenever conditions call for it.
Last year we worked 10-hour days. It just depends on how many people we have and how many shifts we have to cover.
If it was like a 3-day snowstorm, would you just keep cycling through the shifts?
Yeah, people will get called in and on your days off. About 10 hours is all you want to plow. You're pretty tired after 10 hours.
The rest of the year, Asplund is a foreman on DOT's chip sealing crew. He travels around the southeast fixing roads.
What do you like about this job?
It's always something different. You're always learning something. Do a lot of traveling. Yeah, there's a lot of things I like about it.
After a few hours, Asplund drops me back at the garage and immediately heads back out. He'll continue plowing until noon, when the next shift takes over. Later on, I sat down with Southeast District Superintendent Scott Gray to get the bigger picture on plowing. Just in the Southeast District, weather varies widely depending on where you are. Gray travels frequently to smaller communities where there may only be a small team covering miles of road.
Yeah, Haines and Skagway will get a lot more than normal than we do. And then, of course, we have Hoonah and Gustavus that are kind of out there, and they get quite a bit of snow too. And then Sitka, we just had our first snow in Sitka on January 9th.
Gray said he also fields complaints from the public, usually related to berms in driveways or occasional mailbox casualties.
I would really like to be able to take people out in a vehicle, you know, and like you did. And I think it's quite the eye-opener for people that, but of course we can't do that, but anyway.
Liability.
Yeah.
Now, when I'm shoveling the berm in front of my driveway or stuck behind a slow plow truck, I won't feel the urge to shake my fist. Plowing isn't an easy job. And I'm grateful that people like Asplund and Gray are out there making the roads safer for the rest of us.
Mr. Plow! Yay!
For AK, I'm Adeline Baxter.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Kathy Burrick. Burrick is a veterinary pathologist and a self-employed contractor for many state agencies.
So pathology, here's the basic thing. It's a scientific study of the nature of diseases, it causes, processes, development, and consequences. So it's the study of disease. I had a little bit of idea as to why I got into what I was doing, but the path was that I went to undergraduate, but then went to veterinary school at University of Wisconsin-Madison. It's a four-year college, and then while I was in veterinary school, I started a master's project in wildlife disease. It was a virology project. Like, his veterinary school wasn't enough, so I had to start that. I was trapping rats and different kinds of rodents throughout Alaska looking for a virus. And then I happened to meet my husband while I had a trip up here to Barrow, Alaska, to do work on the harvest crew up there, working with the subsistence hunters. And so he's in Alaska, I'm in California, and so decided after the residency to move back up and start my business. So a lot of times people ask, well, who pays you to go out and do this? Who pays you to go out and cut up dead animals? It depends on the species of animal. So marine mammals, it's a combination of fish and game and National Marine Fisheries Service. The cook and the beluga is extremely critically endangered, so National Marine Fisheries Service has a requirement actually to try to get to every dead beluga and try to figure out what the mortality was. I don't think I've ever had anything where the neighbors smelled it. I have gotten in trouble with my family though, especially one of my kids is really not into this, and I did a necropsy on a bear that actually died of a clostridial infection, which like produces a lot of really horrible gases, and that just went through the entire house, and he was like, Mom, don't do that again. Personally, I like dogs an awful lot, like live ones. I like cats, and I can't think of an animal I don't like except spiders.
Kathy Burick lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Adeline Baxter and Eric Bork. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
Is all. For this edition of Alaska News Nightly, tonight's stories can be found on our website, alaskapublic.org. You can like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Elizabeth Harbaugh and Casey Grove in Anchorage, Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, and Christine Trudeau in Bethel. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Zachariah Hughes. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the statewide BP Teachers of Excellence program. You can nominate your favorite teacher at bpteachers.com. The deadline is February 1st. Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
4 out of 5 Alaskans addicted to heroin started by using prescription opioids. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medications prevents anyone from taking them without permission, which could endanger them and lead to consequences with law enforcement. Find out more at opioids.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Public media loves being part of your day. Thank you for listening and for your support. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.